Good afternoon, Seattle, other places in the farther reaches to the east and the west and the north and the south. On this evening, this early evening here in Seattle, in Little Saigon, the elegant Little Saigon, on September the 11th, 2019. So far, so good, right? No new false flag to commemorate the date. That's a good news story. So far, I think. So happy 9/11, yeah. And you can say, well, Dan, that's a shitty thing to say, happy 9/11. But folks, I think the entire story we were told was bullshit. The only thing I'm certain of is a lot of people were murdered on that day, and we have still not found the true culprits. I'm certain of that. But do I know who actually planned it, who actually funded it? No. Do I think anything about the story from 9/11 makes any sense? No. Once you give up on the far-flung hope that there are no lines your government won't cross. I'm gonna tell you a story I cannot prove. And it could very well be a kind of psyop, which means a story could be false. But not because I want to lie to you, but because somebody lied to me. My mom had a friend she went to school with, and this friend was married to somebody from the CIA. And if you don't know what the CIA is, that's a Central Intelligence Agency. And round about the time my dad died in 1993. He died of a blood disorder that you generally don't get as a logger, but who knows, it does happen. And he wasn't exactly Mr. Environmentally Friendly. I mean, the dude would use diesel for everything. He would use diesel for everything. In fact, if he could cook with diesel, Dad would have cooked with diesel. And he would say, oh, we're putting down beauty bark. Let's just salt the earth with a fucking 500 gallons of diesel to make sure the weeds don't grow. And probably not much of anything else. So that tells you my father's environmental sensitivity. He was a logger. Let's just understand that. And he grew up in an America where he assumed that nature's bounty was an infinite cornucopia. That's what the propaganda told him. The propaganda told him that there's infinite oil and infinite possibilities, and everyone's going to live on Mars in 20 years. Everyone's going to have a helicopter and a helicopter pad. This is what the future's going to bring. He believed it. And some things did happen that were pretty cool. I mean, I think we all would agree that the computer age has changed a lot about our society. The fact that I can do this podcast right now with the quality that it has from a auditory perspective is a function of the computer age. So it's not like everything has been a giant fucking suck ball of rancid onion sauce. It's not like everything's been shitty. But the fact is this, folks, a lot of things haven't really turned out the way people like my dad expected. Anyways, I don't want to go off on that tangent. That was a tangent. So around about the time my dad died of this rare blood disorder that generally people, loggers don't get, but people who work in the nuclear industry do get, my mom's friend said that she started doing research and she got some of her husband, who was retired, his help. And again, I don't know what retired CIA means. I met this guy once. I met him once. I actually did. I met him once about the time, I think it was a few months before I was getting commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Army, and I met him. So it could have been 1996. And to tell you the truth, he seemed like, and I don't know how to phrase this, he seemed sad and he seemed just generally not happy with existence, and I think he was a drinker. And folks, I'm going to let you on another little secret, and I don't think this is a secret. I think that this is in every spy novel, and it's not accidental, and if you've ever been in the military, people will know what I'm talking about. There are two kinds of people you find in those sensitive positions, like military intelligence or intelligence services generally. There are the people who are the true believers, who are there, who are committed. Well, actually, I'll say there's three kinds. There's always the lazy ones, who are just there to fucking get a check. But if you subtract the lazy ones, there's the truly committed believers, and then there's the sociopaths. And the sociopaths don't become drinkers. But I will tell you this, the ones that have a soul that I met in the military, especially the ones who were military intelligence, they were drinkers. They got drunk a lot because that's what that job did to them. It wore them out. Their internal moral dialogue did not fit their external reality. And so they drank to make up for it. And I don't know why they drank, because these guys were true believers. They kept their fucking secrets, but they drank. Anyways, I met this guy once, the ex-CIA, and so supposedly he helped his wife research my dad's situation. And so you know, my dad went into the Navy during World War II, okay? I think it was 43 or 44. He was 17. He needed his parents to, you know, sign for him. He volunteered knowing he was going to go to the Pacific Theater. And probably he was going to be one of those people on the first day of the D-Day for Japan. Like, he was basically going to run a landing craft. He was a mechanic, but he was also his, you know, his tactical duty was to be basically the landing craft commander, from what I understand. So if we'd invaded Japan, and let's just be honest about the game of life here, folks, and the way that probability works. If we had invaded Japan, there's a very low probability I would be around right now. An invasion of Japan would not have been like the invasion of Europe for a number of reasons, not the least of which we did, whether we want to admit it or not, turn the war in the Pacific into a very, very racist war, a very kind of us versus them, very dark, very vengeful, very much about, you know, wiping out the other guy, not unlike the war on terror, which has, you know, dehumanized vast areas of the planet, where in fact, I don't think any of those people had anything to do with 9/11, but we have managed to dehumanize hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, men, women, and children who have been killed because of the wars on terror. So here's the thing. If they had invaded Japan, there's not much likelihood I'd be here. I'm just being honest. I have a master's degree in military history, blah, 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 from a mediocre university. I have a mediocre degree. You don't need to listen to me. But what I'm telling you is that with my mediocre military science background, if we had invaded Japan, I think it is true. It would have been a bloody mess. It would have been like Iwo Jima, but like the kids like to say these days, on steroids. On steroids. Well, we didn't invade Japan. In 1945, I believe it was on... I want to double-check this. Let me just double-check this really quick, because I don't want to give you guys bad information. Give me a second here. I'm going to ask the rethunculator. The rethunculating device that replaces the brain with the synthetic intelligence, not unlike, you know... Yeah. August 6th and August 9th, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So on August the 6th and August the 9th, August the 6th, we dropped a bomb on Hiroshima, and it was called Little Boy, and it was technically what you would refer to as a cannon device. And for my nephew, if you end up listening to this podcast after you've learned all your fancy theory from the crocodile heroes of the great Queensley Navy, a cannon device is one of the types of implosion devices theorized during the Manhattan Project as a way of taking two subcritical masses of this fissible material, this highly fissible material, very unstable, bringing them to critical mass where slow neutrons in the environment can cause spontaneous fission, and then neutrons, you know, cause more fission, more neutrons are released. That's what's called a chain reaction. But the chain reaction in the case of a nuclear bomb happens almost instantaneously. It is not technically a pure conversion of matter to energy. That's often a mistake. People think, oh, it's pure matter to energy. No, I think that I think it's about 10 or 15% gets converted to energy. Maybe it's a little less than that. Maybe it's closer to 5%. But the point is, there's tremendous amounts of energy released. Maybe it's 15% of mass, and that's a lot in terms of E equals MC squared. That's a lot of fucking energy. Anyways, that's another little tangent. But my dad did not end up driving a landing craft into some invasion of Japan. He didn't have to do that, and that's good. He was stationed on Guam, And Guam is an island. I think you'd say it's in the Pacific, the South Pacific, maybe South Central. I'm not an expert on the Pacific, but it's in the Pacific Ocean. West of me, many, many thousands of miles west of Seattle, where I'm at. And he was stationed on Guam. That was where he was, during the war. And it's possible, according to my mom's friend's research with her CIA retired husband, that he was on Guam during the time of what's called Operation Crossroads, or about that time. And it could have been earlier. It could have been another test. I mean, again, just because we know about some of the tests, but that doesn't mean we know about all of them. One of the lessons I've learned about the government over many years, if they fuck something up and they can hide it, they will hide it. They are exactly like a little kid. The government is exactly like a 5-year-old or maybe a 3-year-old kid. If they fuck something up and they can hide it, they will hide it. So honestly, I don't know for certain. I don't know for sure if he was there during Operation Crossroads. That would have been the summer of 1946. That would have been roughly a year after the war ended almost. But here's the thing, even a year after victory over Japan, there were still a lot of troops in the Pacific. People need to realize you don't unspin a military machine in 2 weeks. A lot of people stayed deployed in Japan, around Japan, in the Pacific, in Europe for a couple years, even though they served. You say they served in World War II, don't they get to go home? Well, if you haven't worked for the military, you don't really know how it works. But no, a lot of people who got in late in the war, they fought and they were in horrible battles. But yeah, they had to stay in a little bit longer, and it just took time. You don't unwind millions of people in combat theaters instantaneously. You don't unwind that. That takes months, if not a couple of years. So it took a couple of years for a lot of these troops to finally end up getting home. Definitely about a year for many. So it's entirely possible that my dad was still in Guam in 1946. So Operation Crossroads was the first official public record that we know of above ground testing of nuclear weapons after World War II. It happened roughly in the summer of 1946. You can research the specific dates. And they did a lot of weird experiments, like they set off bombs deep underwater, really toxic. I mean, they set off basically, plutonium devices and other devices underwater to see what would happen. Really, really damaging to the ecosystem. Yeah, we can all say, well, they didn't know, they didn't know. Well, 2,000 bombs later, in the early 60s, yeah, maybe they figured out. They should have known by 1950. They shouldn't have taken all the way to the early 60s to have an above ground testing ban. That's kind of a that's a special kind of bullshit when you think about it. The whole test ban thing. That should have happened much earlier, and yet it didn't. So no, this whole excuse, they didn't know, they didn't know, they didn't know. They knew. They knew since the Curies died what happens with radiation. Don't be fucking stupid. They knew exactly what was going to happen. And after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, if you haven't seen the Army Corps of Engineers films, after those two atrocities, they absolutely knew what happens when people are exposed to too much radiation. They knew. So here's this kid. This maybe he's 18 years old now. My dad, George Dewey Sullivan. And he's stationed on Guam. And all of a sudden, one day, because one of the experiments they did, they put equipment and animals. They put equipment and animals on flat tops, on carriers, in these lagoons, and set off some bombs to see what would happen, to look at the fallout, to see the damage of the little flotilla, what damage was done. And then they would take the vehicles and see if they could recover them, which means send them to some motor pool, have a bunch of monkey junkies from the Navy, have a bunch of mechanic throwaway people, wash them off and stand in that gunk for maybe 12 hours a day for a couple weeks and see if you can't clean up all those Jeeps and put them back into combat. That's the basic story that I got from my mom's friend at my mom's funeral, okay, when my mom died. This is 2010. So my dad died in 93, my mother died in 2010. Okay, but this is the basic story I got from her. Do I believe it? I don't honestly know, because here's the thing about intelligence services. They are so extraordinarily well known for planting false stories, especially with people who are grieving, especially with people who are sad about something. They love it. I think they almost get off on it. And that might be because of, Operation Paperclip and how we got the whole fucking Nazi network, spy network after World War II. It could be that, yeah, very much, in a sense, the Marvel comic movies have been telling us the truth. Fucking Hydra has been in our intelligence service for a long time. They love fucking with people, even if it serves no fucking purpose. I think that that's true. And this is one of those power jockey things, like people who get into power for only power's sake. Anyways, I don't know for sure what happened to my dad. Okay, I don't know for sure if he was exposed to radiation. There's some weird stories, like this story about how he rebuilt a bicycle. Excuse me, not bicycle. He rebuilt a motorbike, a motorcycle. Think about the effort it takes to take a bunch of parts to build a motorcycle, a bunch of spare parts, and whatever fucking Pacific fucking theater shack you're in, to take whatever fucking parts you can find and build a motorcycle. He built a motorcycle, and then he got drunk and he drove it off of a freaking pier. And then supposedly, and I don't know if this is true, my mom told her friend that, George got really sick at some point that summer. But the thing is, back then they would say you have malaria. You're in Guam. You're like near a jungle. They'll say, oh, you have the swamp disease. They won't tell you that you have radiation sickness. So do I know for a fact, one way or the other? Well, I also found out this, but this too could be apocryphal. Because this kind of comes from my mom's friend as well. And that is the actual naval records, which deal with my dad's service record specifically for that time, was lost in some type of flood at the Pentagon in the early 70s. Which, again, is not impossible because that's another thing the crocodile loves to do. I already said this, I keep repeating it. The crocodile loves to figure out ways to hide mistakes. If it can hide mistakes, it will hide mistakes. Oh fuck, we had a magical flood. Holy shit. We lost like, a couple $1 trillion in the DoD, but look at Al Qaeda. They just flew a missile, excuse me, an airplane into the very spot where we had the records that dealt with the missing $2 trillion for the Defense Department. Holy shit. That's a nice anniversary 18 years later. Listen, the crocodile, if it can figure out a way to hide whatever mess it caused, it will do it. And I didn't say fix. I didn't say repair. I didn't say seek forgiveness and provide reparations. I mean hide. I mean make disappear. I mean make as if it never ever happened at all. If the crocodile can do it, it'll do it. So I don't honestly know for certain if my dad was exposed to some of the experiments from Operation Crossroads in 1946. I do not know for certain if that's true, but it does explain some stuff. It even explains some of his, I would call it carelessness, but he was a risk taker, a big time risk taker. Like, he never understood. There are certain risks he would take when we would work up in the woods, and my brother would vouch for this. It was like he was scary. And listen, and some people would say, well, that's courageous and he was brave. And in some ways, that's true. But I think he enjoyed the risk too. Like, I think he very much had that in him. And for reasons that go beyond the normal kind of testosterone rush thing. Like, if he never was told the truth about what happened, but he was actually exposed to radioisotopes that gave him radiation illness. And it wasn't fatal, but it was bad enough that later he would pay the price with a blood disorder and die of it at 68, which frankly, it's not super young. I'm not saying I wanted my dad to die in 1993, but the fact is 68 still kind of old. I mean, it's still a life. I guess it would have been better if he'd lived another 20 years, but truly, these last 20 years have been kind of terrible. Or excuse me, another 30 years almost, but these last 30 years have been kind of terrible, And to see him get to 100 in a world like this, I don't know. That's kind of terrible too. I do not think he'd like it here. I think he's even less of a fit-in than me. There is a movie with Paul Newman called Sometimes a Great Notion. And in a lot of ways, the Paul Newman character in that movie was like my dad. Like, he was not going to be told what to do. If the whole town said, "We're leaving," and he wanted to stay, he would stay. That was my dad. Now, is that sane? Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. You know, I sometimes talk about the Mount St. Helens thing because I was a kid when Mount St. Helens happened. And there was this crazy old dude who lived up on the mountain. Basically, his name was Harry Truman. It wasn't exactly the same name as the president, but I think it was like Harry Truman. And he lived up on the mountain and he had a bunch of cats and he refused to leave. You know, when all the scientists told him, "Listen, Mount St. Helens is going to blow up. It's going to go kablooey." And I think I recall driving with my dad. He'd have the AM, keep in mind, his trucks only had an AM radio. He would have the AM Como station on, I think it was AM 1000 or whatever, listening to the news or whatever. And it may not have been that station, but it was a station like that. It was Como or it was Cairo. It was one of them. And it was all about, "Oh, he won't leave. He refuses to go anywhere. I'm not leaving this mountain." And eventually, you know, he does leave at several hundred miles an hour. But that was very much my dad. I can recall, I believe I recall that he smiled. Like it was like that would be me. I would be the guy on Mount St. Helens saying, "Damn nature and damn the volcano. No one's telling me to move." And there's a lot to admire about the stubbornness of a person that would stay in a volcano because he simply doesn't want to do what other people are telling him to do. But there is a certain kind of recklessness to that too. And I think my dad had a recklessness, a dark recklessness, and a dark anger that was hard to explain. And the thing is, that is interesting about the story, and I call this story because I don't know that it's true, that my mom's friend told me at my mom's funeral, the story that that she and her CIA retired husband put together. The thing is, it does sort of explain some things. It explains some of my dad's darkness. It explains some of my dad's crazy. It explains a few things. It may not explain everything, but it explains a few things. And it might even explain some weirdness to our own family in terms of our own genetics. We don't know. Who knows? These are very complicated issues. But it would explain a lot about him psychologically. And it would kind of explain his sort of like live for the now attitude. He really did have that in a lot of ways. You know, if people go through the thing about PTSD, it's bad enough to have it, but what's even worse is to not know you have it. And the thing about my dad is I think he had a lot of PTSD. And a lot of it, listen, folks, logging back in the day, let's just be honest about it. No matter how good a day you had, logging has always been dangerous as fuck. If you've never worked up in the woods, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. It has always been dangerous, if not to death, at least to severe injury. You know, the stuff that the people that do the, you know, insurance policies for companies, you know, the crush injuries and the severed hand injuries, the types of injuries that leave you maimed for life. That's logging. That's reality. I almost cut off my own leg one time with a chainsaw. That was not fun. That's logging. That's reality. That's the kind of shit that can happen. So just logging alone might be enough to create PTSD. I truly don't know. It's one of those questions I cannot answer. You know, my name is Dan. I was his son. He died when I was 23 years old. In so many ways, he was a mystery to me. He talked a lot about work. He talked a lot about the woods. He would give me little snippets of what it was like growing up. But there was so much I just never knew about the guy that he kind of kept to himself around me. I don't know why. Don't know why. Don't know if I want to know. A lot of secrets. I got to be honest with you. Maybe not big, scary secrets. I'm not talking about Stephen King novel, some horrible thing in the attic secrets, but there are secrets. And I'll go a step further and say something really crazy. Almost every family has secrets. almost every family has stuff that, you know, you learn. Like, for example, I thought my grandpa was my grandpa, and because of all this 23andMe bullshit, I find out that there was a grandpa in the woodpile that was my actual grandpa. So truly, yeah, we live in interesting times. How is this related to the beginning of my rant, my conversation about today, about 9/11, about all of this? Well, here's the deal, folks. I do not know for certain that this happened to my dad, but the fact that it happened to a lot of people is also public record. A lot of people were exposed to radiation during the Cold War as covert experiments. They knew what they were doing. The whole argument that, oh, well, they just didn't know. We had friends growing up, the Browns, and I'm going to tell you a story as best as I can remember it, because some of this may not be perfectly correct. But if it isn't perfectly correct, the story of the Browns would apply to other families as well. The Browns grew up in Utah back in the 50s. Now, back in the 80s, when I knew them, they were all getting, some of them were getting cancer. Like the older ones were getting cancer, the ones that grew up in Utah. And they grew up not far from the, technically, the Nevada Test Range, or at least not far from the fallout zone. That's where they lived. Not far from a fallout zone, because back then there was above ground nuclear testing in Nevada. They would set off nukes above ground in the continental United States in Nevada. They weren't huge nukes. They weren't hydrogen bombs, thank God. Thank God they weren't that crazy. However, they did shoot those things up into space, up into the Van Allen belt. Boy, that's another story for another fucking day. Why you would chuck so many nukes into space 100 miles up. You know, yeah, they learned some things. They learned that they could create EMP. Oh, great. That's great. I'm so glad you fucking learned that nasty fucking tool. Congratulations. You created a weapon that can set us back a few hundred years in a matter of seconds. Congratulations, Science Industrial Complex of America. So, do I believe this could have happened to my dad? Yes. Can I prove the story? No. Will I ever be able to prove that this happened? I don't see how, because here's the deal, folks. I kind of feel like the wheels are coming off, like totally off the cart right now. And there are so many wheels coming off the cart. There are so many examples of things going sideways that I'm not really sure any of this amounts to a hill of beans. Like, whatever did happen to my dad, fine, but that's not really the problem we're facing right now. We're facing some weirdness in our environment. We're facing the fact that, you know, like I've told people, last summer I would wake up at 4:30, not to my alarms, but to this constant chirping of birds. And this last spring and summer there have been birds, but not that many. And frankly, it's been quiet as fuck. And as far as insects go, I got to attest once again, not as many insects, and the ones that are there are the ones that basically you wish weren't there. And even those aren't doing so good. Like there was a mosquito breakout. And again, I know they're spraying for it, so maybe that's part of the mosquito thing. But there was this mosquito bust out a little while back because of a rain, but even the mosquitoes don't seem to be doing too well. So I don't know. I don't know what's causing it, but there is something really ugly in the environment. And folks, there are a lot of possibilities. One of which is it's all completely created. There was a book, I never read it. I never read it. It was Michael Crichton. I never read this book, but I saw him one day on fucking C-SPAN talking about his book. I think it was sometime back in the early 2000s. Maybe it was the 1990s, but I think it was the 2000s. But it could have been earlier. But he was talking about this book he'd written called State of Fear. And the whole premise was the government was using weather control to convince people that climate change was real to grab more power. And here's the deal, folks. That also, I mean, it sounds horrible. And you'll say to yourself, there's no way the government would do something like that. Okay, so let's, yeah, so the Brown story, they get the cancer, right? That was the Browns. And I went off on a tangent again, but that's the point. That was the Browns. They get the skin can the other cancers, they get the cancers. They would wake up in the morning and they would see dust on their cars back in the 50s and they didn't know what it was and it was fallout. And yeah, the government also marched Marines into the Ground Zero. You can actually see pictures of this. They marched Marines into the aftermath of a nuclear explosion, like moments after. And the Marines were not that far away. So if you're talking about penetrating neutron radiation and gamma ray radiation, they were well within distance to get cooked by the devices that they were using at the time. And in terms of the fallout, they definitely went through the fallout. They actually went through the nasty aftermath. So yeah, does the United States government have a history of using American soldiers and sailors? Well, listen, as late as 2011 during Fukushima, Obama had an aircraft carrier stationed off the coast of Fukushima there as quote-unquote support. And they didn't want to tell the truth about how bad it was. So a lot of freaking Navy personnel got sick. And I think many have died so far. I think a few have died, but many got sick because they did not want to be honest about how bad Fukushima was. No, folks, I hate to break it to you. It's not about Republicans or Democrats. It's not about liberals or conservatives. If you're caught up in those labels, you've already missed the boat. It is about the fact that if the crocodile fucks something up, and when I say crocodile, you know I mean government. Yeah, when the government, aka crocodile, aka government, fucks something up, and it can hide something, it can hide the fuck up, that's its go-to plan. It's not, the go-to plan is not to fess up and be honest. That's a load of horse shit. It's like these CIA fucks who will say, well, listen, you only hear about our failures. Listen, dude, we hear about your successes too. You know, like Allende being assassinated. We hear about your successes as well. We hear about you poisoning food chains and whatnot. Don't worry, CIA. We hear about your failures and we hear about your fucking successes, or what you would call successes. Hey, we got, you know, chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein back in the 80s so he could gas his own freaking people because they were Kurds. That's a fucking success. Yay. Yay, CIA. Yeah, the government's capable of doing this, so I don't know. And honestly, that's, I didn't want to spend time on this topic, but I think I may, I don't know, I think the battery's doing okay. I think I'll go to another topic, but yeah, 9/11, what do we say about it? We were all cucked. We were all lied to. We were all fooled. We were all convinced that we could trust the great crocodile. The great crocodile that promised the elder so many thousands of years ago, if you just bring me, if you just give me one or two babies a year, I'll bring you some buckets of gold. But please, by all means, elder, tell everyone, ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance. Next topic, because I kind of like, that was meant to be an opening topic, but then it turned into this weird conversation about other kinds of bullshit. So, I read today, and again, this may not be perfectly accurate, but I read on an article about ecosystems and wolves being mammals, predators, which are often apex predators in their environments, wolves. Wolves need about 10 square miles of habitat. So one wolf equals 10 square miles. That's how much healthy habitat you need for a wolf. That turns out to be roughly, you know, 6,400 acres. If you take the current population of the world, human population, okay, human beings, which is, let's say it's 7 billion, and you take the available acreage out there, and I mean habitable. I don't mean every square inch of the earth. That kind of argument's insane, and we'll get to that in a second. But if you ask yourself, what is habitable land out there? And you take that and you divide it, you end up about roughly 2 acres per person, roughly. And I suppose if you have a family and you pull resources, you know, hey, you want to pull our 2 acres together and have a Gumbus farm? Yeah, Dad, yeah, Mom. Can we grow a little weed in the back 40? Well, it's only going to be 8 acres, so there'll be no back 40. But here's the thing, folks. If you assume that we could divvy up, like, 2 acres per person, ask yourself honestly, okay, if we weren't using oil, if we weren't pouring oil on those 2 acres, would we have as much food as we have? Would we have the prosperity that we have? If we weren't pouring oil, I mean, it's not that simple. I'm not just talking about food. I'm talking about mineral extraction. I'm talking about all the things that oil gives us, all the things that our relatively cheap energy gives us. If we didn't have all this relatively, and it's still relatively cheap, folks, if you consider how many man-hours, there's about 600 man-hours of labor in a gallon of gasoline. So if you want to understand how much a gallon of gasoline is, that's like you could hire 600 people for an hour. If you can figure out a way to do that for $4 or even $8, please tell me how, other than doing it in China in some horrible sweatshop. And even there, I don't think you would get that. So yeah, 2 acres per person. I don't think that gets you iPhones. I don't think that gets you any of the technology. I don't think it gets you any of it. I don't think you get any of the stuff that you've gotten used to. I don't think you have the economy where people will deliver food to you, where you can get Thai food and pizza and all that delivered. I don't think you get that. Does it mean the world comes to an end? Does it mean that human life ceases to exist? Well, here's the deal, folks. If it takes 6,400 acres for a wolf to survive in a habitat, one wolf equals 6,400 acres. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. Wolves kill, you know, small game. They kill, they'll take down the weak. But they don't kill everything. And they are apex predators in their environments, but they mostly just cull the weak. Humans are the ultimate apex predators. We kill everything. We don't kill some things. We don't just kill the fluffy bunnies. We kill the things the fluffy bunnies eat. We kill the stuff that those things eat. We kill everything. And yeah, you could argue we don't always do it on purpose. Like DDT. You know, maybe we didn't realize it would, you know, cause the eggshells to be thinner. And so, you know, the bald eagle would have a massive population collapse. But frankly, they probably knew. If a wolf needs 6,400 acres, that's 6,400 acres, and for roughly 7 billion people, we have 2 acres of habitable space. I don't mean all the space. We're subtracting the deserts, folks. We're subtracting the oceans. We're talking about actual habitable space here. We're subtracting the swamps and the lakes. If we can divvy up roughly 2, and what the fuck, if you want to give me 100 acres, you can say, Dan, I think everyone could have 100 acres. Fuck, go ahead. I'm going to let you in a little secret. If a wolf needs 6,400 acres, 100 acres ain't enough for you to have everything you want. You can have some of the things you want. You can probably have some of the things you want, but without oil or some type of energy substitute that allows you to do magical shit, like live beyond your means, without that, you're basically going to be subsistence farming. And also, let's be honest, in that kind of world, where technology is falling apart, where in all likelihood, at least half of all the nuclear reactors do not get safely shut down, so they cook off. In that kind of world where we still might be looking at climate collapse of some sort, it isn't going to be 7 billion people, and it isn't going to be 15 billion habitable acres. We don't know what those numbers will look like. It's very possible that the habitable acres shrinks a whole fucking lot. And then you're basically talking about very little space per person. And then you're talking about a massive die-off. And that's really, if you look into the future, barring something magical, barring the aliens showing up, which as a Christian, I gotta say, if the aliens show up, they're not aliens, they're demons. But barring something magical involving revelations, we are in a very difficult situation at this point in human history. We are fracking, which is an ecological disaster, because we don't have a fucking choice. We are fracking, which is a financial disaster, a debt disaster. It does not make money, folks. I know you may not want to believe this. Do your own fucking research. Net, net, as a part of our economy, the fracking economy only piles up debt. That's what it does. And what's worse, if you think in terms of the damage it's doing, if you think in terms of the unintended consequences, if you think in terms of what it's actually doing to those communities and their ecosystems, the amount of debt we're racking up is frankly unimaginable. One of the largest freshwater aquifers left on planet Earth, technically a giant underwater lake, I think it's called, still called Oglala or Ogallala, whatever, this giant underground lake, this giant aquifer in the Midwest, which frankly we've almost drained. But what we're doing to it now is we're opening up rock and water, and that's going to cause things that are usually kept relatively inert in rock, like arsenic and mercury. And that's going to get into something like Oglala. That's one of the things, folks. We don't know what we're doing, but we frankly don't care. That's how you know things are bad. When people get so reckless that they do shit that's so fucking crazy. It's just completely crazy. Like, we should not be ever building another boiling water reactor. If you want to sell me on thorium reactors or, light water reactors or salt pebble reactors or whatever, if you want to sell me on alternative reactor design, which usually you don't get nuclear weapons material from those, they're not going to build them in America. But if you want to sell me on that, fine. But for the types of reactors we build in America, so we can get really dangerous weapons grade material from them, they're really dangerous reactor designs. And they're almost designed to blow up themselves. It's almost like we use a nuclear bomb to create nuclear bombs. It really is the case. We use a slow motion train wreck to create fast motion train wrecks called nuclear bombs. Yeah. So I don't know. So here's the deal, folks. I don't think people understand, and they need to understand, they really do need to understand that this is a simple math problem. That as human beings, if you want to, okay, for example, if you want to say, I believe in science, and I believe in biology, and blah, 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 this and blah, okay, fine, think about the biology, think about the science. Sometimes people will say things like, well, Dan, we could fit everybody in Texas. And folks, that might be true, but that makes about as much logical sense as, oh, I'm the manager of a game reserve in India, and we have about 100 acres. And we're going to have about 50, a herd of 50 antelope. But 2,000 Bengal tigers. We're going to have 2,000 Bengal tigers because we believe we can prove, because we read a Cato Institute article, that we could have 7 billion people in Texas, we can have 2,000 Bengal tigers in our game reserve. You all know that's fucking crazy, right? But that's basically the argument, the club for growth people, the people that try to sell you on infinite growth. And this applies to Paul Krugman and all the fucking Keynesians and all the modern monetary theory people who are fucking crazy as fuck. These people will tell you there are no limits. What I'm telling you is you can't have a jungle of nothing but Bengal tigers. You really can't. That jungle does not survive. Okay, there are so many Bengal tigers you can have per square fucking mile. You have more than that number, your jungle is going to crash. And frankly, it's kind of cool that this is the topic I chose to hit, because I can close out on this one, because this is a long podcast so far. But yeah, you cannot have a jungle of nothing but Bengal tigers. It's like, you know, Welcome to Bengal Tigerland. There are 20 Bengals per acre. They smoke cigarettes and drive SUVs because they're mutated. They chase you down in the dark of night. There's just too many of those damn Bengal tigers. And when a human comes along, it's a feast. And they want that long pig. Although, I don't know if I should joke about long pig. I fear that... So, in graduate school, maybe this is a nice way to close this out. In graduate school, I studied military history, but specifically I studied Russian military history, and specifically Soviet history, World War II, what they call the Great Patriotic War. The war between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, you know? And here's the thing, guys. After 1941, pretty much almost the entire German war machine, economic war machine, industrial machine, was committed to the Eastern Front. So if you want to think of World War II in Europe as a pie chart, when we invaded Italy and North Africa and then later France, we invaded those places, we probably hit at best maybe 15 or 20% of the German army and German armed forces. Most of it was on the Eastern Front. Eastern Front was horribly large. It was a horrible campaign, a horrible theater. Both sides did horrible things, and there's still probably secrets. I mean, and there were some, and if you're a horrible person, like if you're into military science, there were a lot of innovations. Because again, it was war on a scale that most people can't imagine, the Eastern Front during World War II. It was a very, very, very large-scale affair. And I'm not really sure exactly where I was going with that exactly. Crap, I think I lost my train of thought. That is really depressing. Is it the aluminum in the sky? Yeah, probably the aluminum in the sky. Yep. I should probably close this out because I actually had a thread of thought there, but I totally fucking went off the rails, and it's so depressing. It's like those moments when you think, did I just have a senior moment? Although in truth, I did a little bit of weed today, so I did not drink, but I did a little bit of weed, so I could have had a weed moment, and that's okay. Anything and everything is possible if you really understand what's going on in the world right now. But what I gotta tell you is this, folks, there is an absolute limit to how many of us can live on planet Earth. I think we have to admit that to ourselves. We don't want to because we've been led to believe that things can go on forever and ever and ever, and that there's just no limit. There's no limit to what we can do. And there's truth to that. Like, a long time ago, I imagined... And maybe this is how this relates to the Eastern Front. So this is how I saved myself from a senior moment. And it's a story I may still write. I thought of it as a novel, but it could be a short story. But when I was still in the Army, my last year in the service, I was kind of nibbling away at programming, getting into the internet that existed in 1999, belatedly. And I was thinking about this idea, because here's the thing. You know that quote from Albert Einstein? You know, I don't know what World War III will look like, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. And this thought occurred to me that technology had been moving so quickly and had become so advanced, and it seemed as if we were going to solve the energy problem too, that it might be worse than that. Like, World War III might never end. World War III might never end. And it might be more like those fucking, you know, those fucking time rings in the George Pal version of the time machine from, like, 1950, what the fuck. Where they say ominous shit like, by the year 600, all the factories for making oxygen have been destroyed. Yeah. What if World War III never ended? What if it just kept going on and on and on until the human race became mole people and the surface of the Earth became a toxic wasteland, probably as bad as going to Mars or someplace like that or someplace worse? What if World War III became this machine of industrial hell that almost became not quite a perpetual motion machine, but more like an evil parasite that fed on human civilization and the human project until all of humanity was ground to dust? And when I think about the last couple decades since 9/11, it feels to me like, and it hasn't been, I know it hasn't been 20 years, but it feels like more than 20 years, but the last 18 years. And I'm going to take the ceiling on this and not the floor, and that's a mathematical thing. The last couple decades, they've been pretty fucking dark. And only darker. And kids are being convinced that this war thing isn't just something we got to do for freedom, but it's actually now the message is it's fun. And you can go blow shit up and look at all this cool shit you can drive. And they'll say things. They'll pay lip service to you're defending America, America's blah, blah, blah values or something. But in reality, it's just bullshit. What they're selling, what they're actually doing, what the military is doing, if we were really honest about it, if we deconstructed their ad campaigns, if we looked at the current marketing and ad campaigns of the military, they are selling the military and selling war the way that cigarette companies, the way Marlboro and Camel and those cigarette companies would sell cigarettes. And it is, I think it is, it's despicable. It's absolutely despicable. I mean, here's the deal, folks. You might not be an anarchist Christian like Uncle Dan, but you might very well be a libertarian or a constitutionalist or a small government Republican if such things still exist. And you might simply feel things have gone too crazy. The crocodile's gone crazy. And yes, the crocodile has gone crazy. And the crocodile might be nearing its end. And that's one of the things that causes crocodiles to go crazy, is they start to die. I've said this before, I'll say it again. People look at that first Gulf War and they say that's a sign of the peak of America. We won the Cold War and then we defeated Saddam Hussein and we were in our golden years. And then the 90s were booming and it was great. And that narrative makes sense until you look at it deeper. The reality is the first Gulf War was a failure. When your empire has to start fighting wars over shit like that, it means the system is falling apart. That's what that means. It's not a sign of strength. It's not a sign of continuity. It's a sign of failure in the system. In fact, a wise person would have noted in 1991 that the world system was entering a period of chaos, despite what that stupid fuck, oh my god, the endism fuck, fucking Fukuyama. Fucking Fukuyama, fucking Fukushima, Fukuyama and his whole endism bullshit. History had ended. No, wake the fuck up, Fukuyama. At that moment that we had our great victory, history had just fucking begun. Again. And frankly, it doesn't end or begin. It's always happening. Wake the fuck up. Get over this fucking bullshit of historicism like there's some final epic. The world is always beginning. The world is always ending. There is one Lord in heaven, and he is infinite. And guess what? The universe itself might very well be infinite, and we know one little piece of it from the Bible. That doesn't mean we know everything. We know one little piece of it from the book of life, the book of nature, from studying nature, from being scientists. That does not mean we know everything. We know some things. We know that once the French bulldog enters the ocean past its death pupil stage, when it converts to a hermit crab raccoon, that it is connected to some deeper, darker magic from beneath. An ancient tribe of aliens from planets far away, up to no good, are building an army of French bulldog hermit crabs. That's what I mean. We don't know what's going on. So anyways, I'm going to close out this podcast because my battery light is going to flash. And I feel like I wore out my welcome with these topics. I'm sorry for the trip down memory lane about my dad. Full disclosure, my dad and I really didn't get along, especially once I became an adult. And that was only for 5 years, right? 5 or 6 years of where I was kind of an adult and he was around and we really just failed in our father-son relationship. And, you know, I take whatever blame you can as a 20-year-old, but I guess I was hoping he was going to be the mature one. What I gotta tell you, like I said, my dad was crazy as fuck. If you think I'm crazy, holy fuck. That guy was crazy. He brought his skidder home once. A skidder is a big metal tractor, weighs many tons. He brought it home once so we could use it when we were chopping wood for winter, so we could like wench up logs and we could cut them. Well, the problem was he was driving the skidder over our septic tank and completely fucked it up. And from that year onward, we had this little sump down the lawn. That part of the lawn was always green. It was always green there on that part of the lawn where the septic tank was cracked. Yeah, that was always green from then on. He was a crazy, crazy fuck, and I think he was in his own way brave, and I do miss him because in the sense that I do feel like I owe him a little bit of an apology. He was kind of a mean fucking bastard, existentially speaking, but in a weird way, he toughened me up in some ways. I don't think that this is a happy... I don't think we're at Happy Fun Time Land. And I think that that was the message he understood, even on an unconscious level, that we're not in Happy Fun Time Land. Yeah, the TV might be telling you you're in Happy Fun Time Land, but then there's the real fucking world. And the real fucking world is treacherous and scummy, and people are duplicitous, and they lie, and they take advantage of you, and sometimes they'll poison an 18-year-old kid that signed up to fight the Japanese during World War II. That's the system that a lot of you guys worship, especially on a day like this. Yeah, so... that's something to meditate on, though. So meditate on that, especially if you believe in the magical tiny crocodile. Because, yeah, some of you believe. You honestly believe we can just put it on a diet. If only Ron Paul had been elected, he would have put the crocodile on a diet. But then that is so implausible, because no crocodile in the history of imperial government-type crocodiles has ever voluntarily shrunk. They only shrink because someone's attacking them, or they're basically collapsing. That's why they shrink. It's death. Anyways, I'm going to let you guys go because who knows, I might have another podcast in me later. I'm kind of feeling like that, and I hope you guys are having a great evening. It is Seattle. It is 9/11. Happy 9/11. I can't believe I said that because that sounds kind of crazy. But if we can't celebrate our demise, if we can't reinvigorate our doom, if we can't grab Gloom by its balls and pull his dick back and call it an ugly woman, then we're not really alive. We don't live like the future folk. They're free of all pretense in the future. They have but one cloth to wear on their bodies. Everybody weighs an average of 65 pounds. The average life expectancy of a human being in the year 2065 is the age of 29. It's a terrible time when you have to eat the goo that grows under the rocks. You don't want to eat the goo on top. That goo on top might be poo. Don't eat the poo. Don't eat the poo past the year 2022. Okay, I think I gotta close this one out. But you guys have a great evening eating the poo of 2022, because it's coming, baby. And that poo's gonna be a magical goo that'll make you feel like there's love for me and you.